Good day. Today is Monday, 23rd March 2026, and let me go straight in by saying that I had earlier today made my video for today. I had, in fact, just finished it a few minutes ago, and of course the topic of the video was the discussion, a detailed discussion of Donald Trump's 48-hour ultimatum to the Iranians, the ultimatum in which he said that unless Iran immediately reopened the Strait of Hormuz, the United States would carry out a devastating attack on Iran, over the course of which it would destroy Iran's entire energy complex. Well, as soon as I finished this program, I went to Donald Trump's Truth Social page, and there I read this comment, another post from Donald Trump, and he says the following: "I'm pleased to report that the United States of America and the country of Iran have had, over the last 2 days, very good and productive conversations regarding a complete and total resolution of our hostilities in the Middle East, based on the tenor and tone of these in-depth, detailed and constructive conversations, which will continue throughout the week. I have instructed the Department of War to postpone any and all military strikes against Iranian power plants and energy infrastructure for a 5-day period, subject to the success of the ongoing meetings and discussions. Thank you for your attention to this matter, President Donald J. Trump." Well, the moment I read that, I had to realise, that a lot of the discussion of my video, which you'll be able to watch shortly, has been again overtaken by events, though not entirely so, as I will explain shortly. But I also immediately had my doubts, because Trump is talking about negotiations between the Iranians and the Americans for an end to the conflict. He appears to be implying in this Truth Social post that the Iranians are about to capitulate, or that's the way it reads to me. And I have seen absolutely no sign, no hint of that from the Iranian side whatsoever. And sure enough, within an extraordinarily short time after Donald Trump published that statement on Truth Social, the Iranians published this rebuttal, and its title is "Trump Backed Down After Iran Threatened to Retaliate. No talks underway." And the Iranian statement continues: "US President Donald Trump has backed away from his 48-hour ultimatum to strike Iran's power plants after the Islamic Republic warned that all energy and power installations in the region would be targeted in retaliation. Trump claimed in a post on his Truth Social media platform that the United States and Iran have had, quote, very good and constructive conversations over the past 2 days regarding a complete and total resolution of our hostilities in the Middle East," end quote. The US president also said that he had ordered the Pentagon to postpone all plans for military strikes on Iran's electricity generation infrastructure for 5 days, subject to the outcome of the negotiations. A source familiar with the internal discussions in Tehran told Tasnim News Agency, and Tasnim, I should say, is a semi-official news agency in Iran, on Monday, that there had been no official contact between Tehran and Washington. And then we have a quote from the source. From the beginning of the war until today, messages have been sent to Tehran by some mediators, and the clear response has been that we will continue to defend ourselves until we achieve the necessary deterrence. End quote. The source, who spoke on condition of anonymity, said Trump's claim was aimed at stabilizing the markets and buying time to implement his military plans. And then there's a further quote. With this kind of psychological warfare, neither the Strait of Hormuz will return to pre-war conditions, nor will calm return to energy markets, close quotes. So the Iranians, in other words, are straightforwardly denying Trump's assertions that there have been the in-depth, comprehensive discussions, conversations, searching for a complete and total resolution of hostilities that Donald Trump mentioned in his Truth Social post. And I have to say this, based on everything that has happened, based on everything that I've heard from the Iranians, and that I have seen play out in the Middle East over the last 3 weeks, I have no hesitation whatsoever in preferring the American account to President Trump's. President Trump, unfortunately, has a habit of making up things, of pretending that there have been conversations. He's twice invented conversations that he claims to have had with Prime Minister Modi of India, for example. He's claimed that he's brokered ceasefires between various combatant countries around the world to the bemusement of those countries. And now he's claiming, or so it seems to me, that there have been in-depth negotiations between the United States and Iran, when the Iranians are saying, and I have no doubt they're telling the truth, that there have been no negotiations of that sort at all. In fact, had there been negotiations, I think we would certainly have heard about them. And notice that Trump, in this Truth Social post, does not say where the negotiations are supposed to have taken place, who was involved, where these negotiations are going to continue. He provides none of the information that you would need if you were to take this comment seriously, especially in light of the many things of this nature that he has said in the past, which have turned out to be untrue. So, anticipating in this introductory comment that I'm making here, what I'm going to say in the rest of the video, over the course of the rest of the video, which was made with on the assumption that President Trump's 48-hour ceasefire was still in place. Over the course of the video, I carefully explain why the 48-hour ultimatum and the Truth Social comment in which it was made gave every appearance of being an angry and emotional spasm by Donald Trump in a condition of panic following the attack on the Israeli nuclear on the town of Dimona in Israel, close to the nuclear installation there, and with the worries that must be affecting him about the deepening crisis in global energy markets. I explained why implementing that ultimatum made no sense at all, that what he was threatening the Iranians with would be, could not be done with any, within any sort of time frame that made military or political sense, but that if Donald Trump were to conduct an attack of that kind, it would undoubtedly, as the Iranians have warned, provoke a massive response from Iran, a response against energy facilities, energy production facilities across the Middle East, which, far from reducing the problems that Donald Trump and the United States are facing, would merely make those problems much worse, far worse even than they already are. And, well, again, to anticipate what has clearly happened is that various people over the last 2 days within the White House, within the administration, have been explaining all of these things to Donald Trump, explaining to him why what he has threatened cannot work, why if it is attempted, it would be a disaster. And Donald Trump, faced with these, with this reality, has tried to walk his ultimatum back, and as is the way with him, rather than simply admit that the warning, that the threat was a mistake, he's come up and he's given himself a get out of jail card by inventing a negotiation with the Iranians, which is not even taking place. Now, that is not to say that there will not be negotiations over the next few days. There's been some references in the media about contacts between the Iranians and the Americans via the Russians. The Iranian response, which I just read out, actually says that there are various countries that have been positioning themselves as mediators, and that there have been contacts through these mediators between the United States and Iran, though Iran has not changed or modified its position. So it's possible that the United States, that Donald Trump, will now try to pursue avenues to set up a dialogue with the Iranians through the good offices of these mediators, who are almost certainly, in fact, realistically, they can only be the Russians. Having said this, the key takeaway here is that Donald Trump has backed down. He has blinked. He was right to back down. It would have been an act of supreme folly to act on his ultimatum of 2 days ago. But having said that, it would have been far better if that ultimatum had never been made in the first place. This strange behaviour is going to reinforce the opinion in Tehran that they have Trump on the run. And it is also going to reinforce the view of the Russians that in dealing with Trump, they have an unstable actor who changes his position from one moment to the next, and from one day to the next. And I'm going to finish this intro by also saying that there's been a lot of speculation which leads off that Iranian statement that Trump never intended to implement his ultimatum at all, that he made his ultimatum and then withdrew it, and that was always his plan, and that he's trying to deceive the Iranians. The other suggestion that I've seen, and this also derives from this Iranian statement, that what alarmed Trump was the explosion, the increases in energy prices and his need to reassure energy markets. Well, the last is obviously true. One of the reasons he walked back his ultimatum is because he saw what was happening in the energy markets, and he was forced to row it back. There is no 4D, 3D or 4D chess being played here. And as for the idea that this announcement of talks is somehow intended to lull the Iranians into complacency, perhaps before the United States is about to initiate a ground operation or something like that. The trouble with that is that the Iranians obviously are not going to be deceived in that way. In fact, their statement says as much. And as presumably even Donald Trump must know, there is no realistic possibility that the United States could begin a ground operation within 5 days. So I don't think there's any complex psychological game being played here. I think this is just a man who is now starting to panic, who is now saying bizarre things on Truth Social, who then has to walk them back when he is briefed about the danger of what he is proposing. I don't think one should see anything more in this than that. Whether negotiations will now take place, whether those negotiations have any prospect of success at all, well, that's another matter. And I think at this point, I'm going to let the rest of my video, the video that I made earlier today, speak for itself. Well, thank you for this introduction, and from this moment on, the rest of the video, as recorded earlier, follows. Directly after I made my previous program, which, as I said, was made very early in the morning yesterday, directly after I finished that program, as I rather anticipated, more news about the conflict in Iran started to appear, and this news was of a furious comment by the President of the United States, Donald Trump, demanding that Iran reopen or open the Strait of Hormuz within 48 hours, with a threat that if that did not happen, the United States would begin operations to destroy the entirety of Iran's energy system, starting with the most important power unit within Iran. Now, he didn't identify which power unit that was, but for the record, it is the Bushehr nuclear reactor, which, as I discussed in a recent program, Israel, in fact, attacked some days ago, on the same day that Israel conducted its attack against the South Pars gas field, also in Iran. I said that it was surprising to me that there was so much attention given to the attack on the South Pars gas field and so little attention given to the attack on Bushehr. But anyway, the attack both on Bushehr and on the South Pars gas field provoked an exceptionally strong Iranian reaction. Attacks on gas fields and gas facilities in Qatar, attacks on energy installations across the Persian Gulf, devastating damage, which, as I discussed in a program I made a few days ago, caused massive shocks across global energy and financial markets. Well, that was what the President of the United States said. And in fact, this ultimatum, because it is clearly worded as an ultimatum, is due to expire late tonight. And well, we will see what exactly it is that the United States does once this ultimatum expires. I say what the United States does because Iran made immediately clear, directly after the President of the United States gave his ultimatum, that Iran would defy it, that it would take no step at all to loosen Iran's grip on the Strait of Hormuz. The Iranians, in fact, categorically deny that up to now they have imposed a blockade of the Strait of Hormuz. They say that all that they're doing is that they're restricting access through the Strait of Hormuz of ships carrying cargoes for countries that are allies of the United States and of Israel, the two countries that, in fact, are currently engaged in the attack on Iran. And on the subject of the attacks on the energy installations across the Persian Gulf, the Iranians also say that these are done entirely in self-defense, and that the reason those attacks are happening is because of despite the denials, despite the protestations to the contrary, the reality is that the United States, especially, but I suspect Israel too, are also using the airspace of these countries and base facilities in these countries in order to conduct the offensive, the military offensive they are currently engaging in against Iran. Now, I am not on the ground. I have no access to direct information about what is happening in the Persian Gulf over the course of this conflict. But for the record, I have no doubt that on the last point, what the Iranians are saying is true. All the indications are, as far as I can see, and in fact, I am sure of this, that the United States and, by the way, Israel also, are indeed using Saudi airspace, the airspace of the various Gulf states and various base facilities that they have in all of these countries in order to facilitate the military operation against Iran. Were that not so, were the airspace actually closed, were the base facilities not being used, I personally do not see how, given the geography, this operation could be carried out at all. Just saying. So, yes, it is true that the Gulf states did publicly advised the United States about commencing the conflict with Iran. Saudi Arabia was one of the countries that also said that it would be a mistake for the United States to engage in the conflict against Iran. There's been all sorts of rumours and stories that the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, MBS, who's also the Prime Minister of Saudi Arabia and has been the de facto ruler of the country, even as Saudi Arabia and the other Gulf states were publicly giving these warnings, was actually advising, urging the United States and Israel, but specifically the United States, to conduct this attack against Iran. We are talking about the Middle East, so this kind of duplicity in that part of the world is commonplace. I have no doubt whatsoever that the Americans and the Israelis have been working with the Gulf states, have been using their airspace, have been using bases on their territory, that this is all pre-agreed and pre-arranged, and that what the Iranians are saying on this topic are true. Now, this brings us back to the Iranian response to President Trump's ultimatum. Because what they're now saying is that if there is the sort of attack against their energy system that President Trump is talking about, then the gloves are entirely off. The Iranians will mine the Strait of Hormuz, something which up to now they have not done. And I have previously discussed the enormous problems that would cause for shipping in the Middle East, for shipping from the Persian Gulf, and for any operation that the United States and the US Navy might be planning to try to force open the Strait of Hormuz. The Iranians will mine the Persian Gulf, not just the Strait of Hormuz, but the entire Persian Gulf, in effect closing it entirely to shipping. And that they will then conduct a serious air and missile offensive with drones and missiles against the entire energy systems, the energy production systems of the various Gulf producers, of Saudi Arabia, of Qatar, of the UAE, all of them, Kuwait as well, and that they will also, if necessary, enlarge it still further and begin attacks on the desalination plants in the Arabian Peninsula and in Israel itself. So if the president acts on his ultimatum, if the United States takes military action consistent with the president's ultimatum, then Iran will respond, and according to the Iranians, their response will be devastating. And again, the Iranians are making various claims which are, of course, impossible for me to verify, but they are, for example, claiming that since the successful interception of the F-35 fighter jet by the Iranian air defense system over central Iran, the presence of American and Israeli aircraft over Iranian territory, over central Iran at least, has drastically reduced. There are only supposedly reconnaissance drones and high-flying reconnaissance aircraft operating. Military aircraft conducting attacks have basically vanished from the skies over central Iran. And the Iranians say that their success in destroying the air defense system of the United States and of Israel has been so great that they have achieved instead aerial dominance of the skies over Israel and the Gulf states. Well, as to the last claim, I think that hugely overstates the reality. Iran still has, apparently, fighter jets, but we don't see them operating over the airspace of the Persian Gulf states or of Israel. Israel and the United States, by contrast, continue to have massively powerful air forces. So in that respect, at least, it is impossible to say that the Iranians truly and actually do have control of the airspace over Israel and the Persian Gulf. There's an enormous amount of exaggeration and inflation of success on every side in this conflict, and this particular Iranian claim must be treated in that way. But it is undoubtedly true that Iranian missiles and drones do get through. There's a report that I've just seen that the Iranian missiles have now become very sophisticated, that they're able to conduct complex combat maneuvers, that they're able to evade Patriot missile launchers. And in fact, I have seen recent video footage of Iranian missiles hitting targets inside Israel. And I have to say this, I see no sign, no evidence of any air defense system operating to counter them. No evidence of successful interceptions. That it goes beyond that. No actual attempt even to intercept these missiles. I'm not saying that all of Israel is open now to missile attack by the Iranians. I'm simply saying that based on the video footage that I have seen, the Iranian missiles are able to strike positions in Israel, and the Israeli air defense system clearly now has significant gaps in its coverage, consistent with the reports which I've been reading for several weeks, in fact, about a significant depletion of air defense missiles on Israel's part and on the part of the United States. And, well, also coming back to other comments, there was the comment I received weeks ago before the conflict began about how Iran had received assistance from Russia to improve the capability of its missiles so that they can engage in evasive maneuvers. Of course, the Russians have been doing that for a long time. The Iskander missiles that the Russians launch in Ukraine apparently cannot be successfully intercepted by Ukrainian air defense missiles. And, well, we see the same play out in the same way now in the Middle East. And plausibly, quite possibly, the Iranians are able to do this with their missiles because they have received Russian assistance. Again, to repeat, I don't know for a fact that this is the case. Neither the Russians nor the Iranians are talking about it, but it was what I was told had happened before the war began. So that brings us to the respective threats that the President of the United States and the Iranians are making. Firstly, can we take these threats seriously? Are they in fact achievable? Well, I am going to say straight away that in terms of destroying the entirety of Iran's energy system, I think that it is not achievable in the time frame that the President of the United States appears to expect. The Russians have been hammering away at Ukraine's energy system for several years now. Certainly this winter, the escalation of Russian missile strikes, Russian missile and drone strikes on Ukraine's missile energy system increased significantly, exponentially. But Ukraine can still produce electric power. There is still the ability to generate electricity in Ukraine. It has never stopped entirely. The United States is reputed to have fuel missiles available to conduct a operation against Iran's energy system than the Russians have to conduct their operation against the Ukrainian energy system. Iran's energy system is supposed to be extensive and well organized and rather decentralized. It spreads across a country twice the size of Ukraine. Some parts of it have been significantly hardened. I doubt that the United States has the ability to knock out this entire system entirely within the kind of time frame that the President of the United States imagines. And of course, if the Iranian claim that American and Israeli fighter jets are no longer operating over central Iran because of the proven ability of the Iranians to intercept F-35s, and as I discussed in a recent program, because of the possible deployment of an S-400 system to this area. Well, if that is true, then this operation is going to be even more complicated and even more protracted and even more difficult to do than the President of the United States appears to think. Certainly, it will require very large numbers of missiles used day after day, week after week, to attack the power installations in order to make sure that they're not only knocked out, but that they remain knocked out. In an operation of this kind, the United States would have one advantage, one possible advantage, which the Russians in Ukraine do not have. Ukraine receives a very large proportion of its electric power from nuclear power stations, of which there are several on Ukrainian territory. That is not true in Iran. Iran relies mostly on thermal power stations. There is, of course, the nuclear power station at Bushehr, which I have talked about. The Russians have avoided attacks on Ukrainian nuclear power stations. They have accepted that doing this violates the provisions of the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. They have accepted urgent advice from their friends, China first and foremost. The Chinese have repeatedly told the Russians, and this is public, there have been Chinese public statements to this effect. The Chinese have repeatedly told the Russians, and by the way, the Ukrainians, not to attack nuclear power stations. So the Russians up to now have avoided attacking the Ukrainian nuclear power stations. I get the sense that the United States, in conducting a aerial offensive against Iran's energy system, will show none of the same forbearance that the Russians have shown in Russia's offensive against the Ukrainian energy system, and that the Americans, and probably the Israelis too, will not hesitate because of these inhibitions from attacking the nuclear power plant in Bushehr. Nonetheless, if we simply treat this as a game of destroying nuclear power stations and destroying energy facilities, even if the Americans do attack Bushehr and seek to destroy Bushehr, ignoring the presence of Russian technicians who are still there, even if the Americans do that, I still think that because of the vastness of the country, the decentralized nature of the power system in Iran, which apparently is relatively modern and said to be in reasonable shape, well, I still think that despite any attack on Bushehr, the United States would find that it would take weeks, months probably, and the expenditure of an awful lot of missiles before the energy system in Iran is destroyed in the manner that the President of the United States appears to be threatening or was threatening a few hours ago. Now, what about the other side? What about the Iranians? Well, here I think it is different, because the Iranians can launch attacks on energy production facilities. We're talking about oil extraction and gas extraction plants across the Middle East, in places like Saudi Arabia and elsewhere. I don't want to discuss this in too much detail because, well, it's not something that I know a huge amount about. But I understand that these sort of facilities, if they are attacked and the surface structures can be destroyed, yes, they can eventually be repaired and be brought back into production, as happened in Iraq after the 2003 war. But it is a protracted and complex process. It might take several years to do, as Qatar is already warning. And, well, it would also have a dramatic and immediate effect. Whatever energy production is still taking place in the Middle East, whatever export of energy still continues from the Middle East through the pipelines to the Red Sea or wherever, would stop, compounding immediately the energy crisis that we are already seeing. And above and beyond all of that, there is the question of what the Iranians might do if their own nuclear facilities at Bushehr are attacked in the way that I have discussed in this program. Now, in my last program, I discussed the Iranian attack on Dimona. It appears that the attack was focused on the town of Dimona, not yet on the nuclear power plant. The Iranian missiles, however, were able to get through. The air defences appear to have failed. Perhaps there will be attempts to reinforce the air defences around the nuclear reactor in Dimona over the next few days in preparation for further strikes by Iran, this time targeting the reactor. But I can't help but feel that if Bushehr, the nuclear power plant in Bushehr, is attacked, the Iranians, based on what they have already done, are highly likely to attack the nuclear reactor in Dimona. And of course, if that happens, based on what we've seen, based on the problems with the Israeli and American air defense system, it is likely that some, perhaps many, Iranian missiles will get through. What that will mean in terms of damage, I don't want to discuss. I'm not going to discuss what an attack on Bushehr in terms of damage might mean either. I lack the technical knowledge to discuss these things, and I don't want to imagine or try to guess what the effect would be. When I say effect, I mean effect in physical terms. In psychological terms, the attacks on nuclear power plants like Bushehr, but especially Dimona, would be tremendous. It would precipitate us into an enormous crisis. I touched on this in my program yesterday. And, well, I would have thought that it is absolutely not in the interests of the United States to do something of this kind. So, or at least to allow something like this to happen. So that brings us back to the president's ultimatum. It seems to me that what the president is threatening to do is completely misconceived. If he is serious about this ultimatum, he's going to dig himself, the United States, the global community, and his allies in the Middle East into an even deeper hole. He will be launching the United States into a protracted operation to suppress Iran's energy system, which will use up resources and carry risks. I suspect risks of aircraft being shot down and things of that kind, and which would drain resources and which would not have the immediate impact that he imagines. Whereas he would be setting up the entire Middle East for potentially devastating strikes by Iran against the energy facilities of America's allies, with dramatic effects potentially on the global economy, and potentially also if we see a serious assault by Iran intended to destroy or seriously damage Dimona, a situation which could propel us into catastrophic consequences that I discussed in my program yesterday. So this is an entirely misconceived, borderline irrational ultimatum and threat. And in fact, in the short period after it was made, I saw all sorts of comments all over social media effectively making that point, saying that the president is beginning to lose his nerve, that he's starting to panic, that he's making wild and extraordinary threats that make no sense. George Galloway, former British MP and British politician, went even further still and said that the president is having a nervous breakdown. Well, that's his opinion. I'm not going to say. It seems to me that these wild threats of the president and these ultimatums are something that he's engaged in many times. But anyway, that was one comment about Trump's ultimatum. And all sorts of others are saying that this is irrational, that it makes no sense. There are rumours that senior members of Congress, again, members of the Democratic Party mostly, are now strongly urging the president to call it a day. And, well, there was the immediate reaction this morning of the financial markets to the president's ultimatum. And, of course, and predictably, they immediately tumbled. Well, what to say? What further to say? I'm not going to engage here in diagnoses of someone's condition. What I will say, and I've said this many times, is that one thing I am very familiar with is panic. I've seen it, how it plays out many times in many places, how extraordinary behaviour results from it. For me, what I take from the president's words, from his sudden ultimatum, which so completely contradicts statements that he had just made a few hours before, that the United States has achieved all its military objectives, that Iran has been 100% defeated militarily, that it has no military capabilities left whatsoever. There was that sarcastic comment in the Financial Times that it's Iran's 0% capabilities that seem to be causing all this trouble. Anyway, all of that, plus the president's comments that the Strait of Hormuz is no big deal for the United States, it's other countries, the Europeans, the Japanese, the Persian Gulf states, who have the economic need to keep it open, who should be taking the responsibility to open it. Anyway, and to keep it open. Anyway, just a few hours after the president was saying all of these things, he now comes up with an astonishing ultimatum like this. I don't think that this is part of some complicated game. I don't think that this is the president trying to keep the Iranians off balance. I see no sign that what he says is achieving the effect of putting the Iranians off balance. On the contrary, it seems to me that the Iranians have consistently, throughout this entire conflict, shown that if the United States and Israel escalate against them, they have the capability and the will to escalate even further in return. And I see no reason to think that strategy on the Iranian side is going to change. So I don't think he's doing it for all of those reasons. I don't think he's doing it for any of those reasons. I think this is just panic, fury, probably triggered by the attack on Dimona. I strongly suspect that the Israelis and others within the American political system had been shocked by the earlier Iranian attack on Dimona. Even if it didn't strike the reactor itself, it came so close to the reactor that it has triggered enormous alarm. And of course, further news about the deterioration in the financial situation, the inflationary pressures that are starting to intensify in the United States, the evidence that energy prices are continuing to creep upwards, the increasingly desperate comments from the Gulf states, that all of this came together. But I suspect, as I said, the trigger was the attack in Dimona. And briefly, suddenly, the mask of bravado and overweening self-confidence that the president has put on since the start of the special operation on the 28th of February slipped off, and we got this wild ultimatum, obviously made without proper advice, obviously made without any real substantive pre-planning. We got this wild statement, and it is a sign of panic. I would just also say that with Donald Trump, this is nothing new. To repeat again, he has made many ultimatums in the past. I remember how in July last year, he said that unless the Russians agreed to a ceasefire in Ukraine in, I think it was the middle of August 2025, he would appoint 500% tariffs on Russia and 500% tariffs on any country, or was it 100% tariffs on Russia and 100% tariffs on any country that traded with Russia. The Russians basically called the bluff. The president himself, realizing perfectly well the economic effects of acting on that bizarre threat, then rushed Witkoff to Moscow. Witkoff came with a proposal from Trump in order to get Putin to agree to a summit meeting. It seems that we've never been provided with the details of that proposal, but it seems that the proposal made substantive concessions, substantial concessions over Ukraine to the Russians. And, well, it led to the meeting, the summit meeting in Anchorage, and I'm not going to waste more time to discuss what happened next. The point is, the Russians called Trump's bluff in July, just as the Iranians are calling Trump's bluff this time. Trump often makes ultimatums. He scarcely ever, in my experience, acts on them. And were he to act on this one, I fear that it would be a disaster for the United States and much more for the global economy. And of course, it would probably also, in the end, be a long-term disaster for him as well. So there it is. This is how I read all of this over the last few hours. Of course, we will see when the ultimatum does expire what exactly the president and the United States in fact do. If they do nothing, or nothing beyond what they have already been doing, well, I think we can say that in that case, the Iranians have obviously called Trump's bluff, but that sanity in Washington has prevailed. Of course, if the president does act on his ultimatum, if the US military do as he orders them, and I have already seen some comments on social media about whether the military should indeed continue to act on orders of this kind. I'm not going to discuss that in this program. But anyway, if the president does act in that way, he does need to understand that, just as I said a moment ago, what invariably happens whenever an attack on Iran is made, that the Iranians conduct a devastating attack in response. Donald Trump often fails to act on his threats. Over the course of this conflict, what we have repeatedly seen is that the Iranians invariably do. So that's, I think, what he needs to keep in mind. Anyway, there it is. Now, in all other respects, everything is exactly as before. The Iranians continue to conduct their drone and missile strikes across the Middle East. Maybe I am wrong, but I get the sense that Iranian missile strikes against Israel are now getting more frequent. Again, it's very, very difficult for me to judge, and this is just a sense, and as I said, I'm not going to insist upon it. And to repeat, I also get the sense that Israel's vaunted air defense system is not operating in some places at all and is struggling to intercept these Iranian missiles, and before long some of the Iranian drones as well. And the Israelis are now tied up in what looks like extremely difficult fighting in Lebanon, which is attracting far too little attention. But it seems as if this attack on Lebanon, far from being, again, the kind of quick victory that perhaps some people in Israel expected. I can't imagine, by the way. I just do not understand why anyone in Israel, after Israel's history with ground operations in Lebanon, extending back to the 1970s, which have always and invariably gone wrong, I don't understand why anybody in Israel should be under any doubt that fighting in southern Lebanon is going to be hard and difficult and unlikely to achieve any dramatic outcome. Anyway, that battle goes on. We have murmurings from the Houthis that they are now on the brink of entering the battle. And in the meantime, the Strait of Hormuz remains tightly controlled by Iran. The Iranians limit the ships that can pass through it. And in the meantime, pressure on global energy markets and financial markets and on the global economy continues. There have been more reports in London over the last 24 hours about contingency plans being prepared in Britain for energy rationing. And I suspect that privately, some things like that are also taking place across Europe as well. Though, of course, it's not something that European governments, for the moment at least, want to talk about, if only because if it became known that it was coming, that might result in panic buying, which would deepen the crisis, the energy crisis, even more. But anyway, that seems to me to be the situation. Now, I discussed earlier in this programme the Gulf States. The Gulf States, for their part, are obviously under enormous pressure. But apparently, they are inching towards a situation where they are thinking of joining the conflict with Iran themselves. I've discussed in many places that I doubt very much that the Gulf States have the military capabilities by themselves to make a decisive difference, or indeed any material difference, to this conflict. But a Saudi official did perhaps give a hint of what some of the thinking in Saudi Arabia might be. And this official spoke about Saudi Arabia leading a coalition of 20 Islamic states against Iran. Obviously, he means Sunni Muslim States against Iran. And of course, the country that he is probably thinking about is Pakistan. Now, Pakistan is a nuclear power. It has very large armed forces, a apparently disciplined and effective and rather large army. And of course, Pakistan has a security agreement with Saudi Arabia. However, I think that the Pakistanis will be very reluctant to get involved in this war. Historically, until recently, they themselves have had good relations with Iran. And though obviously Iran is not the country that is most important to them, nonetheless, there may be some feelings in Pakistan about this. But there are other geopolitical and domestic factors within Pakistan, which I think would mean that this kind of request for help from Saudi Arabia, for direct military involvement, say an attack, an invasion by Pakistan of Iran, would be less than welcome in Islamabad. Briefly, and I have many contacts with Pakistan, one of the most central facts I know about public opinion there is that the United States and even more Israel are deeply unpopular with Pakistanis in general. Maybe I'm not speaking for everybody in Pakistan, but this does appear to be a very widely shared sentiment amongst all Pakistani people that I know. The idea of Pakistan joining, in effect, the United States and Israel in a military operation against Iran, a country friendly to Pakistan, for in a war which Israel and the United States themselves started, well, I'm going to guess that this is going to be deeply unpopular with many, many people in Pakistan. And if you know about anything at all about the situation in Pakistan itself, well, it is stable, but it is stable in the context of a government that is itself actually very unpopular, or at least controversial. A government in Islamabad that launches Pakistan into a war against Iran risks jeopardizing Pakistan's internal stability. I'm not going to say more about it than that, but that's how it seems to me. Beyond this, there is the fundamental geopolitical issue that this is not Pakistan's battle. Pakistan's battle is with India, a diversion of Pakistan's army to fight in Iran on behalf of Israel, the United States, and Saudi Arabia, risks getting Pakistan and its military bogged down in a long conflict in Iran, which may continue for years. It is difficult to see how that would not weaken Pakistan's position relative to India's. And given the bad feelings which exist between India and Pakistan, I can't help but think that there is at least a chance that India might decide to take advantage of it. Lastly, Pakistan's most important ally, the country that Pakistanis, not just within the political elite, but most widely, consider Pakistan's best and most important friend is, of course, China. It was China which, during the clashes with India that took place last year, provided Pakistan with a long-range air-to-air missiles, which the Pakistani Air Force was able to use effectively against the Indian Air Force. And China will not approve of Pakistan getting itself involved in a conflict with Iran. Now, the Chinese have a history of being very soft-spoken in Islamabad about Pakistan's foreign policies. But were Pakistan to plunge into a conflict with Iran, I think that this time the Chinese, who have made no doubt of their overall sympathies with Iran, would express themselves much more forthrightly than they usually do. So this is what the Saudis are saying. Maybe they're getting reassurances, words of reassurance from Pakistan. But I believe that the Saudis would be unwise to count on this too much. Probably they would get some help, but the extent of it should not be overstated. I think that this coalition of 20 Muslim states taking on Sunni states, taking on Iran, I think that this idea, frankly, has little reality behind it. And that if the Saudis think that it does, then they're compounding the many miscalculations which they themselves have made. Anyway, that is my view. I'll be very interested to know what people in Pakistan think about this. If people from Pakistan are watching this program, I'd be very interested to see what they say. And they can post their thoughts about it and comments about it on the thread to this program. Anyway, that's the situation at the moment. It remains my very clear view that rather than think about dangerous escalations, attacks on energy systems, ultimatums, impossibly complicated operations against Kharg Island and opening of the Strait of Hormuz, which seem to me to be filled with risks. I noticed, by the way, that Lindsey Graham is very busy still demanding that all of those risks be disregarded. He still incredibly talks as if carrying out these operations would be a walk in the park for the United States. I would have thought by now even he would be starting to develop doubts, but perhaps not. Anyway, I think that far better than do any of these things, which might risk the outcome that I have discussed, by far the better plan is the one that I have discussed previously, for Donald Trump, the President of the United States, to call Vladimir Putin of Russia, to ask Putin to set up a meeting between American negotiators and Iranian negotiators, perhaps brokered or mediated by Russia, to see whether some way forward can be found. The Iranians, like the Russians, would not accept a ceasefire whilst those talks were underway. But as I said, in many programmes, mostly in wars, negotiations, talks to end the wars between the parties take place without a ceasefire being in place. Donald Trump himself has experience of this. He negotiated during his first term with the Taliban in Doha, and there was never any ceasefire with the Taliban. He has conducted negotiations with the Americans, with the Russians and the Ukrainians. The Russians have repeatedly said that there should be, that there will be no temporary ceasefire until a final settlement is agreed. President Trump himself has at various times agreed with the Russians about this. It seems to me that it is more important to get talks with the Iranians started than to delay those talks by demanding a ceasefire. That is not going to happen. And yes, there will be a political backlash if the United States engages with the Iranians in that way. But if the talks were to result in some sort of outcome that would end the war, stabilize the situation, get the Strait of Hormuz reopened, even if the outcome were visibly an Iranian victory with an agreement made very much on Iranian terms, well, the political backlash from that would still be significantly less than the political backlash we're eventually going to get if the war continues, American lives are lost, American weapons arsenals are depleted, energy prices go on rising, financial pressures in the United States grow in the financial system, and Americans start to feel the pain in the pumps, at the pumps, even as the rest of the world tips into global recession. There's been a very interesting article, incidentally, about all of this in the Financial Times, making again the point today about the extent to which the United States continues to be insulated from some of the economic repercussions of this war. It is less affected by it than the Europeans, the East Asians, the Global South, all of those places are. The reason is that the United States still has massive, very liquid financial markets. There is still the legacy strengths, like, for example, the continued reserve currency position of the dollar. The dollar has, in fact, very slightly and very gradually begun to strengthen in financial markets since the start of the war, though not to the extent that it has done in previous conflicts of this kind. But clearly there is still a residual belief on the part of some international investors that the United States remains the safe haven. Why they would think that is a big question, but it's not what I'm going to discuss in this program. So yes, the United States has those advantages, and it also is self-sufficient in energy. Oil prices have risen, petrol and diesel prices in the United States have risen. But so far, there's been no significant increase in the cost of natural gas in the United States. Also, I am reading. But it seems to me that though these are undoubtedly strengths, advantages that the United States has, which do give it significantly more economic space in confronting crises of this kind than America's allies have. One should not let these strengths lull into complacency. Ultimately, if there is a global recession, if there is a crisis in financial markets, if energy prices explode, that will affect the United States and will affect Donald Trump's own domestic political position, which already appears to be weakening. So, for all of these reasons, despite the risks, despite the political damage, I think that that call to President Putin needs to be made. Putin, it seems to me, is the only person at the present time who has enough leverage over the Iranians and is sufficiently trusted by the Iranians in order to get those talks going. So I think the call to President Putin ought to be made. The president will suffer political costs, but those political costs were inevitable from the moment he made the reckless decision to start this attack in the first place. Better accept those costs now with all the political harm that causes than drag this thing on for many more weeks and months and face an even bigger political price, not to mention economic price, than would otherwise be the case. But, well, we see that the president is panicking. We see that instead he makes wild statements and publishes extraordinary ultimatums. Perhaps it's altogether too much to expect. In fact, almost certainly it is too much to expect that he will adopt this course. Well, this leaves me little time now to discuss the situation in Ukraine, and I don't propose to do so at any length in this programme. All I would say is that following General Sirski's very pessimistic overview of the military situation, which I discussed in my programme yesterday, we've now had further follow-up comments from President Zelensky, who also seems to say that the situation, at least in the northern areas in Sumy and Kharkiv region for the Ukrainians, is deteriorating as well. Anyway, I will do a more detailed discussion of the situation in Ukraine, the military situation in Ukraine, in subsequent programmes. It seems to me that, in fact, there is a considerable amount going on there, but I don't think that this is perhaps the best programme to do them in, given this ultimatum that President Trump has made. I would just say that both sides, both Ukraine and Russia, have conducted drone and missile strikes on each other over the course of the last 24 hours. And once again, the Russian strikes appear to have been devastating, whilst as for the Ukrainian strikes on Russia, well, I've had conversations now with people close to the locations in Russia where two of these drone strikes are alleged, are reported rather, to have taken place. And they told me that they were unaware of them, that the drone strikes presumably do happen, but apparently the drones are not getting through, the Ukrainian drones are not getting through. And given that there is little sign of air defence activity, presumably what is happening is that they're being brought down by some form of electronic jamming. And I suspect quite a lot of this is taking place across the entire conflict area, that the Ukrainians are continuing to send large numbers of drones to Russia, but that the Russians are becoming increasingly effective at jamming their signals and bringing them down in that way. Now, we were privileged on the Duran to do recently on the Duran a program, discussing the military situation with Joao Quaresma. And over the course of that program, Joao Quaresma, who has been attending drone schools in Russia, and he's reporting about the situation from within Russia and itself and from the zone of the special military operation. He's been speaking about various technologies that the Russians have developed to counter drones, and it's clear from what he says that advanced electronic jamming is one of them. And I understand that these drones, these Ukrainian drones that are launched into Russia, are heavily dependent upon the Starlink system, which, of course, during the protests in Iran in January, was successfully jammed. So maybe, especially if the Russians were jamming the Starlink system in Iran or helping the Iranians to jam the Starlink system in Iran, as I believe, maybe the Russians have achieved the same thing in jamming the drones, or most of the drones, that the Ukrainians send into Russia. It would not surprise me, and it would explain a great deal about why we hear every night about hundreds of Ukrainian drones entering Russian territory, but minimal damage as a result. Anyway, this is where I'm going to finish my program today. There'll be more from me soon. Let me remind you again, you can find all our programs on our various platforms, Locals, Rumble, X, Substack, and others. And you can support our work via Patreon and Subscribestar by going to our shop, links under this video. Last but not least, please remember that you can tick the like button and check your subscription to this channel. That's me for today. More from me soon. Have a very good day.